Welcome back to another season of the Lead with Data podcast. I cannot wait to share the stories and discussions that I'll be having with some exceptional data leaders. But before we dive into the fascinating discussions lined up for this season, I wanted to take a moment to express my sincerest gratitude to each and every one of you, our loyal supporters and listeners. Your feedback, engagement, and enthusiasm are really what makes this show truly worthwhile. Throughout our journey so far, we've had the privilege of hosting a diverse range of data guests with a focus on particular themes for each season. This season, we're shaking things up a bit. We will be having discussions across a range of topics from data transformation, career journeys, AI, and technology, with visionaries who are shaping the future of data-driven decision-making for some of Australia's fast-growing or largest organisations. I'm confident you'll find the discussions insightful and have some valuable takeaways and maybe even a few ahas along the way. If you're not already a subscriber, please hit that subscribe button. Our subscribers is what makes the show bigger and get a much wider reach. Welcome back to another episode of the Lead with Data podcast. I'm super excited today to be talking about this topic. Gen AI has become the biggest buzzword that we hear everywhere. But it really isn't just a buzzword. It's a powerful tool that will continuously transform life as we see it, both professionally and personally. And look, I wanted to bring a guest on the show who recently talked about this as a keynote, and I thought it'd be a great one to share with the listeners here. So in this topic, we're going to explore how generative AI is not just a buzzword, but it's a tool that can be used for innovation, enhancing creativity, and solving complex problems. So we'll discuss this in a bit more detail. But more importantly, I think the flavor that Jeremiah brings is more about how we can articulate and leverage its value, but also how senior leadership can actually create a narrative to their kind of executives in terms of what this means for their organization. So thank you very much for joining me on the show, Jeremiah.
Thank you for having me. It was a great intro there. I really appreciate that background as well, and I'm looking forward to get stuck into the topics.
I'll get you to, first of all, give us an introduction to yourself and I suppose just a brief career history as to where you're at and what you've done in the past.
I'm running my own small data and AI consulting firm, which is called Future Grip, and we work kind of the full spectrum of AI, but focused really on the advisory and strategy piece to start off with. Then we help clients go from that to how do we build something, to how do we measure the impact of that with when we actually build it. So that's good fun. And my history, I've been in consulting the majority of my career. So previously at PwC, Capgemini, Invent, IBM, a few places. And my career history is an interesting one because I did electrical engineering to start off with. So it was tangentially related, but not really related to the whole field of data at the time. And then I accidentally got into the Watson program at IBM. I didn't even know what it was when I applied for it, but it sounded cool on the IBM website. So I applied to that and somehow managed to get in. And that really kicked off everything in AI for me. So for those that don't know Watson, it was one of the kind of IBM's big investments into AI, a bit more than a decade ago now. And yeah, it was really interesting for the time, but the kind of things we were doing then would take a week and a half for a model to train that you could do in seconds now. So it kind of shows you how quickly technology has progressed. And then from there, I stayed with Data Science Works as a data scientist for a number of years and then moved through consulting firms doing that sort of thing. So I have done a few reasonably public use cases. So the document lodgement system that works behind the back end of Centrelink, all the automated document extraction. So I designed and built that system, which was quite a intense one that we can step through. That was sort of a team of a bit over 30 over 18 months. It was quite a large platform to build. And as you can imagine, in government, there's a lot to consider when you're building models like this in a government environment. So that was good fun. And then I built various machine learning as a service platforms and those sorts of things as well, and the use cases on them. So lots to talk about.
And look, I ask this question to most of my guests, but what is it that you're most passionate about when it comes to data analytics?
Oh, good question. I think, honestly, it's people. And this is more of my own personal kind of because the technology comes and goes, right? Like, so the technology we use now is based on technology we've had for quite a long time, but it's majority of the same thing. It's just getting easier for the most part, unless you're doing very bespoke things. But what I really like about this career is it's a way of building and improving people. So for me, one of the metrics that I see as my own when I'm cataloging my own success is, okay, how many people have I lifted up? Have I brought on the journey? Have I improved their careers by giving them opportunities they wouldn't have had otherwise? And data is a kind of flexible, almost like a meritocracy in some ways, because I don't necessarily care if you've had 5 years experience on a particular library because the library's been out for a year, right? Like, so there's those sorts of things that you're able to give people more and more opportunities and build people's careers up a lot quicker than other places. And it's just because of the changing nature of it. So that's one thing that I really enjoy when it comes to this career.
Oh, fantastic. And just out of curiosity, obviously you started off in a slightly different field when you finished university, but how have you felt that that's kind of helped you with your career in data? Has there been sort of some things, I suppose, in the past that have been relative, or do you find that now with where we're at with technology and data, it's probably coming a lot more into play now?
Look, I went to university too long ago for it to be relevant now, unfortunately. But when I started, look, at the time, the difference between electrical engineering and computer science was like 3 or 4 units, I think, at university. So the only thing I missed out on was algorithms, data structures, and a few other things like that. So a lot of that was pretty easy to supplement as I started my career, whereas I had all of the mathematics foundation, all of that already. So I think any degree that gives you the maths helps a lot. Because when you're doing things like a lot of the work that I was doing for the first couple of years of my career was taking a research paper someone's written and going, how do I implement this, right? And if you can't read the math that's in the paper, you've not got much chance of implementing it. So step one is understand all the things you've got to go through and you've got to read. And it also helps you understand algorithms quicker, do that sort of work as well. So I think that was quite beneficial because in an electrical engineering degree, you do slightly more math than comp sci, but you do miss out on the data structure and stuff. So I had to learn a few things afterwards to supplement that. But I don't think it was too much of a handicap. And I think it was overall quite helpful. But nowadays, if you're looking at a degree, definitely go for the more specialized degree if this is the career you want to be in, I think.
Yeah. And it's really interesting because every time I speak to a different guest, you know, they obviously come from quite a different background, unless they've, you know, most likely graduated in the last, you know, 5 to 8 years. It might be a little bit more data related. So I'm always fascinated and interested in hearing about the journey and the transition from there. So thank you for sharing that. But let's just get into the topic, because I think people will be excited to sort of listen to, you know, your views, your experience when it comes to creating the narrative, or how do you create a narrative when talking to, you know, your executive board? Because whilst I think a lot of CDOs and heads of data, you know, they know data really well, they can put a strategy together, I don't think many people know what this Gen AI looks like now and where it comes into play. So why don't we maybe start with what you believe are some of the most common challenges when it comes to Gen AI? I've
got a list as long as my arm for the common challenges. What about I go for the first challenge? So the first one is, what are we actually building would be challenge number one. And how the hell are we measuring it would be a sub-challenge of that first challenge, right? So a lot of the times, and this is interesting too, because these kind of technologies have reached the level where you have the board and the executive pushing down on the business to address the technology challenges. Where if you look at, let's take a traditional IT thing like a CRM, if it's a CRM, most of the time there's a general agreement that the business needs this and we go forward and we use that, right? There's no hype or push or I saw this Gen AI thing 10 times at a conference and now I want the organization to do it. So a lot of people rush into developing these things and they don't have a very good use case. And they also have no idea how to measure the success, right? So you may have hit the goal of we've implemented Gen AI and now these people are happy, but in terms of I've spent $500,000, what am I getting back for that money that I've spent? And that probably leads me into my second challenge, which is Gen AI compared to a lot of other data science processes creates the opportunity for value, not value directly. And what I mean by that is, let's say you're augmenting someone's role. I'm augmenting a salesperson. I'm doing all the boring parts of their job they hate doing, the emailing, the updating the CRM, all of that. And then they don't sell anything more after I've done that. I may have augmented that role and now they put more time, but they actually have to then go and sell more and have a measured uplift in the amount that they sell for that to be valuable, right? And the problem that you miss with a lot of these things, particularly when they're driven by technical parts of the business, is you go, okay, well, we've created the opportunity and then nothing happens. What you need is your change management, the leadership and those parts of it on board to actually utilize the value that you've created. because you're not doing an end-to-end process that takes an existing amount of time and you can directly reduce it and it's easy to articulate the value. You're creating opportunity for other parts to grow in order to articulate that value case. So that's a big challenge as well, because not many people do that well, particularly in the IT space. And that's when you have tech-driven business cases don't really have that. And particularly the change management side is not considered often when you put these types of projects in. In saying that, that's not every use case, but it's in a lot of use cases that I've seen. That's where the business value tends to fall down. And it also might not be as valuable as you expected, right, is the other thing as well. So the common thing I see when so I do a bit of work kind of advising, particularly CIOs, about going, how do we do this in front of the board? And they'll go, okay, well, it reduces 2 FTE. The FTE costs us around about 100 grand each. So it's 200K in value, right? It doesn't actually create 200K in value on anyone's P&L by putting this system in, because if they're full-time employees, you're not just going to lay them off under Australian law, right? So you still have to do something with them and create value in other ways. So it's, you have these kind of fuzzy value ops that make it very difficult to articulate. The third thing that I see with that is also, it's like the where does it sit question. It's not a traditional CDO component. It's not analytics for a lot of the part. It's not necessarily software development unless you're building and developing things. And I'm currently writing an article on that at the moment, on whether you build these systems or you buy them onto your additional systems. So I've been thinking about this particular topic a lot, because it's not necessarily a CDO thing. It can be an IT or an architecture question, because in reality, the majority of use cases I see for Gen AI is someone plugging an API into an existing data source, right? You're not actually building anything. You're not creating any systems. You're not creating any algorithms. You may be creating some guardrails and usage patterns, but you don't actually need a data scientist to create a guardrail, right? They're useful to that equation, but they're not essential. So you've then got to think about who actually owns this in the business as well, as a big challenge.
Yeah. And look, I think enhanced decision-making and optimizing data analytics and building a data-driven culture has been something that, you know, in Australia particularly, we've been focused on over the last 10 years or so. With Gen AI in the mix, that's obviously now created a bit of a curveball, I suppose, in terms of what does that look like? So with that in mind, and I know you talked about some of those challenges, and some of those might be relative to the question I'm going to ask you now, but what do you think, what are the challenges now in relation to Gen AI now when it comes to enhanced decision-making for those who haven't perhaps thought about it?
But decision-making specifically, it gets a bit harder, right? If you look at most of the use cases for Gen AI that I've been involved in and I've seen in the market, they tend to be either B2C, so you're optimizing some sort of interaction with your business, or they tend to be, they give you additional insight that you couldn't have got otherwise. So for example, I worked with a company that had hundreds of thousands of free text comments in their surveys that we're doing nothing with, right? So they've created some dynamic personas out of that, and they've themed them together and that sort of work, which is great for Gen AI, because you can then have a conversation with a customer that you hadn't talked to before because you've got all this information. So it gives you additional information, but it's not making a decision. Right. When you then have to make a decision with a generative AI system, that gets very, very different, because then you've got to think about your risk, your bias, your quality control, your ethical considerations. Can you interpret how the decision's made, and can the system articulate to you why that's been made? And then also the risks of the decision, of that decision. I haven't seen anyone put in a use case where a generative AI system is making a decision on its own just yet. I've seen human in the loop. So here's a suggested decision. This is all the information I used to get there. What do you think? Which once again is an augmentation of a role. It's not a replacement. And I think these systems aren't at a level where they're trustworthy enough by the majority of consumers to make the actual decision. And if they are making a decision, this decision is probably so inconsequential, you probably just could have made it automated anyway, right? So you would argue the value of that either way. And the use cases for this type of thing are different, because if you're making a prediction and you're making a decision on a prediction, it's a bit more concrete than a generative AI system giving you a decision, right? So yeah, it's a challenging one for decision making. But I think the important part of the question you just asked was the enhanced element. And that's where I think it's really valuable, is here's all the information. Here's the conclusion I came to. This is how I made the decision. What do you think? That's very important, because it gives you a lot more, it expands the amount of context that you can have in a single situation. So if I give you, let's say I gave you a Power BI dashboard and I go, make a decision based on this, right? You as a human, you're going to look at everything you can. You're going to keep as many variables in your head at one time. And then most of the time, you're making a decision based on intuition of all the information I've showed you. Now, I can bias that decision 100 different ways by showing you different types of information in different ways, in different colors, right? Let's say I wanted you to do something here and not something there. I might label that one green and that one red, right? Simple little visual cues that will actually change the information you're showing. But the benefit of Gen AI systems is they don't have that type of bias. So they're not on intuition. They're kind of weighing up past decisions that make these decisions more relevant. So if you have that alongside the input from a Gen AI system, you may actually make a better decision as a human because you're less pulled in either direction by those things. So it is very useful for that. But the challenges are the same as the traditional data challenges we've had for many, many years now. And we still haven't nailed that. And one of the things that I've seen as well on the challenges side is a lot of companies have gone, we want Gen AI systems, here's all that data. But they haven't classified that data or really looked after that data in the last 20 years. So you might get a document you've put into it, but you've also actually given it version 0.1, 0.3, 0.33, and all these other versions of the document that were in your SharePoint randomly in some folder. And that's all going into it. And it doesn't know necessarily that this is the version I should be pulling from unless you give it that information. And not many people have their SharePoints tagged at that sort of level, right? So then you might be getting inaccurate information that seems very correct because it's from all these other versions. And you may also have information you don't want in there. Like if you haven't classified it and you don't know what's classified and what isn't classified, you could accidentally upload salary information to one of these things and it could tell you what your CEO's bonus package was, right? Things that you really don't want it to know. So that's the challenge when you start thinking more broadly with these systems as well.
Yeah. And look, I think, you know, what you said there is pretty consistent with, you know, what everyone's saying is you've got to have your data in order before you kind of leap into this and look at it. But I think most individuals and organizations are worried about kind of falling behind, but you know, don't still quite understand how they can create the narrative to support the AI initiatives, I suppose, that they want to introduce. So that's probably where, you know, I think you're going to be able to share some really good insights. So why don't you talk us through, how they can demonstrate value and then the narrative around AI when you're presenting this to your executives?
Yep. Okay. So it's a multi-part question, so I'm going to have to break it down. So the first part would be sort of how do you structure and articulate what you're talking about and talk about the capability, and then how do you put it in a way that they care about, they being the board or whoever you're talking to at that time, and then see how do you use the right language and have the right people in the room. So if you break it down like that into three different things, I'd probably start with the middle part. So what do they care about first? So are you looking to do this because you are trying to follow the hype and you're trying to stay on top of your industry, or there's an expectation from your senior stakeholders or your shareholders or someone like that, which is often the case for these things, right? There is an expectation for you to be on the front foot when it comes to advanced technology. Do you see an obvious competitive advantage? Can you work with the board or the executive to help articulate that before you even get to the planning stage of this? Is there something that can, you know, is there a direct improvement of your operations that you can see? Or is it something that the board is personally interested in? So what you're trying to figure out there, is it a core component of our business in the next 5 years, or is it a pet project, right? They're the two things you need to figure out. And depending on the answer to that, you go down wildly different tracks, right? So a pet project, you start thinking, okay, well, how do I put the guardrails on it? How do I manicure the information that's going to go into it so it does the type of things that these people want? And if it's more of a, you know, we have a competitive advantage or we can see a big operational improvement from this, you then go, okay, well, let's look at the underlying capability. Technology-wise, we have it, and most companies will have, unless they haven't done their cloud transitions yet, but it is 2024, so I assume that's already happened. So if you're on one of the major cloud providers, you can access this stuff very, very quickly. Particularly on Azure, it takes about 5 seconds to set it up and access it, right? So the access to technology is not the problem. It's the underlying capability in your data. Then you would ask the question is, do I have the right development or investment in my underlying capability? Do I have a data team? Have I got this work done? Have I made the policies across the organization to classify this information? Have I done that work? You would then start to do a bit of a maturity assessment on where you sit and then figure out your readiness for it. Now, what I will say is you never want to use the maturity assessment as a no, right? You don't want to do this to say, no, we're not going to do Gen AI, we're not ready. You just want to say, these are the things that we need to focus on to do Gen AI well. And it helps you articulate that in like an agreed framework, right? If you look at the things that a board cares about, you put a maturity assessment, you put a capability assessment, these sorts of things they can read and digest and kind of understand, okay, we're roughly here. So we do need to do these things if we want to do it well. And then you go back to the pet project versus competitive advantage. It's competitive advantage. Then you go, okay, we need to boost these two things on the maturity scale. Let's figure out how to do that, right? You might also start doing some use case development, some, you know, kind of more pet project-like development on the Gen AI side to keep that interest up. But in reality, the main core bit of work you're doing is the maturity improvement to do this well. And you may not need to do that across your whole organization. That's the other thing to think about as well. Let's say, I mean, most organizations have differing competitive products in different industries and those sorts of things, right? Maybe it's just one that you see the competitive advantage in. So just do it in one, right? You don't have to do it in the whole lot. It doesn't have to be a global kind of capability to start with. Prove it in one spot and then move out. And for a lot of companies, that'll be customer service, for example. If you want to automate some of your customer service, start there and have a look at, okay, well, we can either improve our underlying capabilities, move up this maturity curve, build what we need to build. But then you need to figure out the investment for that. And sometimes that can be prohibitively expensive. So the next question is, okay, is there off-the-shelf products I can consume to get 90% of that competitive advantage that I'm after? Maybe that's a better path if you're not very far in the maturity scale and you haven't made the investments in data in the last couple of years. So there's a lot of different questions on how you demonstrate that value, but it's taking a very rational what we can do and what we can't do approach. And sometimes that's difficult to even get a perspective on what's within the business, right? And senior leaders sometimes are a little bit removed from the systems on the ground, and they might say what they do in the box, but you might not necessarily have that component. So that's when you can get, you know, advisors in or spend some time within your own teams to really understand if you have the capability to move this ahead. And then on the third point was the right language. So you never want to really structure this as a technical conversation. And honestly, the technical conversation around Gen AI is probably one of the more boring ones in the data science world. It's pretty well established patterns. There is a gold standard on how you use these types of things in most cloud environments. The problem is the gold standard is very difficult to get to, as it's quite a mature approach to doing it, but you at least know roughly what you need to do as a starting point. And then partners you on board can help you with that as you go through it. So you don't necessarily need to do too much on the architecture and development side, but what you really need to do is on the alignment on the business side and the capability build. So then you get to structuring and articulating that value, which is the first point we made, is okay, well, how are we going to measure it? How are we going to articulate it? Where's that value sit? And I think we just touched on it before, right? That opportunity to create value versus actually creating value. Who else do we need to have involved in this conversation? Because I will guarantee you with 100% certainty, it will not just be technical resources. It will be comms people. It'll be marketing people. It'll be these other things that you need people in, throughout the organization to champion it, to build these policies, to do the change management, to have all of that to actually make it successful, particularly if you're considering it as a program. And then the third, well, fourth, I think we're at a fourth now, as if I told you there's a few points in this one. the fourth is, do I have existing data science platforms or anything like that that could be useful to this? Because oftentimes you've probably seen all the vendors at the moment are all scrambling to add Gen AI in.
Yes.
Sometimes it's easier to consume that from your existing platforms than it is to build it, because anything that goes into those platforms should have already gone through that maturity assessment that tells them it should be trusted, it should be classified, it should be ready to use. Maybe it's easier to start there with some of your use cases. This might not hit all of your use cases, but it might be a much easier starting point. So it's an interesting one too. And that also goes for your vendor platforms. So if you look at a platform that everybody loves, SAP, right? A lot of large organizations have SAP. You can bolt their AI on the side to do particular use cases. That only works if the use cases you want are those particular use cases. But let's say they are, then that might be a good option, right? So it's having that kind of decision point as well.
Yeah. And so in terms of, I suppose, presenting this, you talked a lot about the initial stages, which is almost like a discovery, you know, when you're looking at a project and you got to go through that discovery phase of where you know, the as is to be, where do you want to go with it? What's the opportunity, the why? Where do you think the complexities are now? Why do potentially data leaders struggle? And, you know, what is it that's challenging about kind of presenting this, I guess, to the execs?
Yeah, I mean, when you think about IT products, you have a much more linear perspective on value, right? So the metrics that you choose and the things that you walk through in terms of value, you have to think about there's two kind of columns. You've got your, there's a lot of columns, but there's two primary drivers that your board will care about, right? So you've got your direct financial impacts. So you've got cost reduction, yeah, revenue increase, productivity hit, risk reduction is a big one. Then you've got long-term, maybe financial, but influencing impacts. So that's like knowledge capture within the business, innovation, brand impact, data quality. So data quality is not usually a direct financial impact, right? It's more of a longer term sort of impact. So articulating the value of this in terms of whether it has an initial impact and whether it's structured around those lines. And the other thing that we just talked about before, like it's even if you think about it in terms of FTE, it's not often that direct and your typical FTE modeling won't work. So you need to think about FTE modeling in a different way and you need to look at, and if I was doing a use case with a CIO that had that type of impact, I would get like a, what are they called? They've got a particular name and I can't remember them. They're like a change management person, but for role changes, the people that help people transition through organizations. I would have someone like that in the room to help discuss that as well, right? So if we're displacing these sorts of skill sets, either their roles change in scope and they add on different things that create this type of value, or they transition to these type of roles that create this type of value. So it's having that discussion because it's kind of three waves down from the Gen AI thing you've built. It's okay, well, we've displaced this person. They need to do something else. What else can they do with those skill sets? This is where the value is created. So you have to articulate that thing there and the journey toward that as well. And oftentimes that won't be direct. It'll be 4, 5, 6 months down the track. And you need to articulate that as well. So the timeline in which you're going to get value, it's not just set it up and run and then it's good. Sometimes the use cases are, and those are fantastic, but you don't get those very often, unfortunately. So it's kind of step through the whole of the value process. And I think the next step on that too is because these are so new and there's risk involved, they have to sit in a kind of intersection of got to make financial sense, they've got to help with your decision capabilities, and they also have to have the long-term value or that short-term value, wherever that sits. It has to, the value has to be articulated, right? And if you don't have a couple of value drivers for these different things, it's difficult to make a case for it.
Yeah.
Because they are expensive systems. Like they're nowhere near as cheap as you'd expect. If you get Copilot, it's, you look at the license cost for that and you're like, oh, well, that's double my Microsoft 365 license, right? Like it's not a cheap thing to engage with. So then in that case, and Copilot's a good example. So a lot of organizations I'm working with, instead of rolling that out to everyone, they've gone, okay, well, who needs it the most? Right? We can't afford it for everyone. Who needs it the most? Who's just logging in and sending one or two emails a day versus who is creating documents three times a day? That person's going to have a lot more value out of it because of these things, as opposed to us just blanket purchasing this capability. So there's those conversations as well.
Yeah. So let's talk about maybe a few of the challenges. So one of them is obviously empowering the business, you know, with the right language. What do you mean by that when you talk about empowering the business with
the... Cast your mind back 18 months ago. If you had a conversation about data science with somebody, the first conversation was, oh, when I'm talking about this, I mean this, or this word means this, or AI is this thing, or this is how machine learning talks to AI, right? It was a very kind of rudimentary, basic understanding. Whereas now, because there's interfaces and there's things you can go and play with, and pretty much everyone has used ChatGPT at least once, they understand what that is now. So all of a sudden, they have the language to talk about it, which is half the reason for this hype cycle we're in at the moment, is because it's a tangible thing now. Whereas if I tell you I'm going to build a K-means algorithm to group all these things together, for them, that's not tangible. They're not booting a Jupyter notebook anytime soon and looking at your K-means algorithm, right? But what they can do is sit in front of ChatGPT and ask it a bunch of questions, go, wow, this is amazing, right?
Yeah.
So that's the kind of thing about when I mean making it real, having the right language, it's giving them the ability to talk about these things and to talk about the... So another fun thing you can do is you can build, like you can show them the process of how these bots get trained just visually on a page. And then if you go, I put a document in that's incorrect here, what do you think it's going to say out here? And you go, okay, well, yeah, I can see that whilst it is generating information, it's generating information off what it knows. Therefore, if this is what it knows, it's probably going to be wrong, right? Little things that as data practitioners, we take for granted that people don't actually necessarily understand, because these systems are considered intelligent by people that don't necessarily understand how they're working, right? Yeah. So it's not that it's not intelligent, it's just not that intelligent, right? Like, it is based on things that it's seen. It might be able to generalize, but if you're asking a specific question, you have a specific example that you've trained it on, it will give you that specific answer. So it's kind of enabling them to have that conversation a bit more. So when I say things like bias, privacy, quality control, ethical considerations, data people are going to be like, yep, I understand what all that means. But it's not real to the people that you're going, I need $2 million to fix this from, right? They don't necessarily see the impact. They don't necessarily see the risk. So it's playing those things out, giving good examples, giving them the right language so they know actually when we talk about data privacy, this is exactly what we're talking about. And this is the risk if it goes wrong, right? So you've all got a common understanding of what those terms are. So a lot of the board packs I help like put together for people, oftentimes you only get sort of maybe as a board attachment, you get 2 to 4 slides, right? Or 2 to 4 A4 pages. Out of that, you'd be using 50% on the, this is what we're here to talk about today. And these are what these things mean, right? You're not, you haven't even talked about the value yet. You haven't even talked about your use case. You're just benchmarking the language and how to read the next 2 pages, right? Because if you just give them the 2 pages at the end, I guarantee you, they won't be able to read it correctly. And then they'll put it into ChatGPT and they'll believe whatever ChatGPT says out of it, right? And if they do that, they probably haven't got a good handling on data privacy anyway, because you shouldn't. Over to ChatGPT. So that's what I mean by language, is it's really just benchlining that and having that conversation. And people are very willing to learn is the thing. And oftentimes, as a board member, you're supposed to take a position of, well, you need to teach me what I need to know to make the decision, right? That's one of the key ideas. And then that person, the board member, will do the risk and they'll understand the impact of making that decision, but they also need to know as much as they can about the decision itself. They don't need to be an expert, but they do need to be able to have the conversation. And you'll find that once you spend some time benchmarking the language, when you get into that discussion with the board, they'll ask some really good questions and things you may not have even thought about yourself in your business case, and you get a very, very productive conversation out of it as well.
Yeah. So when you present that business case, and we talked about it before, it's about articulating the value of advanced solutions. How would you, what's your suggestion or recommendation in terms of how, what you should do, when you're demonstrating those values? I mean, we talked a little bit about operational value, financial value, some of those are not easy to measure immediately. You talked about, augmentation of an employee and what that looks like, et cetera. But in terms of demonstrating value and drivers, what things should we be looking at?
Yeah, so you can look at all kinds of different metrics, but what I would say is to look, I really should have remembered what the theory of this was called, but there's a kind of theory of like first, second, and third wave impact. Mm-hmm. And that kind of those waves of impact have different ways of articulating them. So if you then think about in terms of ROI value drivers, you can kind of split it into broad categories. You've got revenue increases, broadly customer experience, both internal and external, like operational efficiency, risk, compliance, social impact, those sorts of things, right? You get all those kind of impacts. And if you go into those things, you might start to look at less traditional value markers, right? So if you're looking at like social media engagement, you have some pretty clear things of social media engagement, like comments, likes on your posts, those sorts of things. But you could start looking at social media sentiment or indicator changes. So an indicator change would be on a particular demographic, are they interacting with our posts more or less and more or less positively? So if you've got heaps of people interacting, but what you actually want is women aged 18 to 24 to interact with this post. Has that group gone up? Has their sentiment changed? What type of things are they selling? And you can use Gen AI to create personas of those people to understand what they're thinking and how they're doing different things. So that offers you value in different ways, right? Than a traditional, we've got X amount of likes, X amount of comments, because you can go that layer down or that extended wave and get that information. Then so you go through your different value drivers. That often takes quite a bit of time, but it's really kind of looking at them in new ways, because you may not be able to increase them in traditional ways. So Gen AI may increase this thing, which will then increase that thing, which then modifies your outcome, just like we talked about with FTE, right? So because you've augmented, now they've got time. Now you use that time someplace else. Now you're in your third wave. And then that time gets used in this way, which then creates the value. So that's almost, you got to go to four levels of impact before you get your actual value out of it. And then you can articulate what that last step is, and that becomes the value of the solution. Whereas if you were to say it created X amount of time, and then that time was used here, then that actually, there's no value in those three steps, right? It's only the value of what that time is then used for that matters to the people that are looking at it. So I quite literally draw it out. I'm visual with this kind of stuff. I'll put it on a slide and I'll go, this is what we're doing, impacts this, 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 here's the value. That's how we articulate it. That's the loop, right? And I find that helps because it is a complicated discussion to have verbally. It does help to kind of write those things down.
Yeah. And you talked a little bit about when we sort of had this discussion about your keynote about the intersection of value and, you know, that the majority of your time should be spent on creating value and understanding, you know, what the tools look like. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah. So, I mean, that it's really, I think it's due to the technology itself, right? It's easy to implement. It's relatively easy to implement in terms of setting things up and plugging things in. And most people are familiar with APIs these days, so it's pretty easy to get these solutions running. So the problem is no longer technical on that side. The problem is it costs a lot once you're up and you are running. And that's why you need to look at that intersection of value. You need to spend more time on the value prop, more time with the people using it, more time with the people judging its outcomes in order to then articulate the solution. Because it doesn't have a clear thing it's slotting into. And I think the reason I talk about that so much is because people approach it the opposite way. People approach it from a tech-led view. They go, we want Gen AI. And if you do that, you jump in with Gen AI, you've got the tool done, you've got it all there, but it's not doing anything useful, right? And you often end up going, okay, well, that was a waste of 300K. We could have done that a lot better. And then program stops, right? That's the reason I talk about that so much is just because you need to think about it ahead of time and have those things bedded down. So when you do go and do it, you could celebrate the actual successes you're creating. And I think sometimes as well, the people that spend a long time on these programs, they see the value of it, but then they're poor at articulating that value outward, right? So for example, we've got these interesting kind of use cases that I've seen where service workers, so these were technicians that were going out and repairing certain things in houses, and they had to go out quite regularly because they were like support technicians for these particular systems. So what they would do is they'd store information about clients they were working with, the building they were working on, all that kind of stuff, and then aggregate that information back to the application that the service technician was using, because it's not always the same service technician, right? You've got different technicians coming out. So this service technician is getting a summary of, okay, Mary's the building manager. She's mentioned all these things in the past. And you can have a more productive, continuous service conversation from that, right? But in reality, all that is not creating any value for your business other than service continuity. So if you don't then monitor your retention rates for the people you're servicing over the next 24 months to see if they've improved or not, then you haven't gotten any value out of the solution. You've just spent 200K to make your tech's life slightly easier, right? And they're not spending any less time on the job. They're probably spending more time because now they're having a productive conversation with the building manager instead of just a hello, right? So you've got to think about those things longer term and the longer term impact of those.
Yeah, because I know you talk a lot about the immediate, the indirect kind of impact, but making sure that you have considered and planned for the long-term impact as well.
But articulated it as well, right? Mm. Because in that situation, it's easy to skip over the long-term impact and go, okay, we're just making the service continuity better. But if you don't articulate that impact, and what you don't articulate never gets tracked, right? So you're never going to track it, you're never going to correlate those two values and go, okay, this led to that, right? And the problem is it's not a direct value either, because let's say you also improved a bunch of other of your service processes at the same time. It may not have actually even been the Gen AI system that impacted that, but at least you're trying to track something related, right?
Yeah. But I also think it also helps to educate the board or your senior executive team, because the thing that they immediately look for or most things people resonate with is the value and the immediate thing they can measure, right? So they're looking at just what can happen now, but you as a leader can't demonstrate the impact of it long-term. We're not probably doing the right thing because we're not educating them that these things over time create more significant value than what we can immediately see. Because like you said, we immediately see a saving of 200K by start augmenting. Where's the value of that in 5 years' time or 3 years' time or even 2 years' time?
And it's going to cost you the exact same amount, if not more, to keep the API running in order, right? So your costs aren't going to go down. At the moment, when I say these, I'm talking mostly about OpenAPI, but they're not running at a huge profit margin, right? They're at a share building kind of thing. So eventually, you're going to get to a point where the price gets up and up and up and up and up a bit more than inflation, and it'll keep doing that year on year until they're making a bunch of money and you're still having to pay for it because it's plugged into your use case. So you need to make sure that the value for that is there moving forward. And then, I mean, it's a very traditional Agile metric, which is your total cost of ownership, your TCO. But people don't do TCO well for data science and AI projects, and it's something they need to get better at. The reason I say that is, whilst we as data people consider ourselves very special and the fun part of the business, it's rapidly becoming more commoditized, right? You can purchase a lot of this off the shelf that has well-articulated value props. You need to be able to do it in your solutions as well, so you can compete with that.
Yeah. And for leaders, I suppose, who are wanting to go down this journey or start to introduce AI, Gen AI, whatever the new kind of technology or opportunity is, you know, you've got a lot of experience in this, Yamo. Where do you think the kind of immediate quick wins could come from? What are the things they could look at to try and maybe start to build that trust and interest from the executive team?
So, I mean, I would start with their biggest problem. So I run a workshop it's actually really fun running, but it's really around importance and feasibility. Right. So you go through and you think about a bunch of use cases across the business. What's going to matter to particular parts of your business? You know, if you're a miner, you've got sort of 10 different arms of the business that all maybe sometimes talk to each other, but have differing opinions on a lot of different things. So you might sit down with each one of those and go, okay, what's important to you? What problems do you want to solve? And then you take all that information off them. Then you do a feasibility assessment. Okay, well, with these new technologies, what are these can we solve now that we couldn't solve before? Right. If you can find something that is in that category, both important to them and now solvable, then that's a winner, right? As long as it is genuinely now solvable, it's the thing you want to confirm, because if you go, Gen AI can do this and it can't, you're in even worse position than when you started. You may have well not tried. So do importance, do feasibility. And if you have one of the kind of circles at the top where it fits both of those and Gen AI can do it, fantastic use case to prove it. Because those ones, oftentimes they've tried to do them before, or they kind of theoretically know how it would be solved, but it might be difficult for the limitations of the current technology. It's a great use case, because then you can go, it's a really big win, it's a big trust factor, and then you can build off that kind of thing as well. So you want to go, that's the best way I look at it. I wouldn't say there's any particular single use case, because it's highly on the business, right?
Of course, yeah.
Really need to balance those two factors. And if you can get those two factors, it's easy to get buy-in, particularly if it's been tried and it hasn't worked, but now Gen AI has a clear pathway to making it work. That's great. That's a perfect use case.
Yeah. Another question. So you found a really good use case.
Yeah.
The cost of doing it.
Yes. Cost is part of feasibility. So feasibility is both technical and cost, right? If it's going to cost you a huge amount of money to do, then it's not feasible. Like, let's say in order to do this, you had to train an LLM from scratch and spend $7 million. Might not be feasible, right? So feasibility means I can build that for less money than it's expected to create, or efficiencies is expected to create, right? So cost, technology, people are your three elements of feasibility. So let's say it was a relatively good cost. You could do it with the technology, but you had no team to do it. It's still going to lose points on feasibility, right? So that's the way you kind of assess that. So it is a really good question, but it does fit into the feasibility branch when you're looking through it.
Yeah, and I completely agree. It's got to be in that feasibility piece of work that you do. But because we can't immediately measure the value and the potential of it, but if we know that there's more opportunity once we get it, how do you then try and articulate that to the business? I mean, probably going back to the long-term value, because I think this is where a lot of leaders and a lot of organizations are at a crossroad because of the cost of it, you know, bringing it, introducing it to the organization, and then the running costs of it. But if there are a number of use cases that you've identified potentially that you can solve using it, what could be some strategies or tips that you can suggest in terms of being able to maybe create a narrative around that and presenting it in a way that they can see it long term?
Unfortunately, you do have to start by creating some short-term value.
Yeah.
The nature of this conversation is you've got people approaching it skeptically, and you need to prove the technology, you need to prove the understanding. So whilst you need to also have a view of the long-term kind of impact, I would suggest if you're trying to pick a use case at the start, you'd pick one that has at least some sort of, like, maybe even phased. Maybe it's a phased 1, 2, 3 sort of thing. This tends to work pretty well when you're structuring your business case. And then you can kind of cascade the value, right? Like, just like you said, it gets more valuable over time. So you've got a bit of a logarithmic curve on your value prop there. But at least the first phase in the first, 2 months or so produces some sort of outcome. Like something we can track, something we can measure, something we can feel that's real. And then once you've got enough buy-in for that, it helps you to do the 6 month and the 12 month sort of phase afterwards. I would argue that most Gen AI use cases don't take that long. The only reason they would take that long is if you're limited by staff and that sort of thing. But yeah, you have to pick something that has some short-term value. Unfortunately, it's just how you get people on board with these things, particularly in a technology stack that's so rapidly moving that you may not be able to even articulate funding 12 months in the future for some things, particularly if there's an evolving technology, right? You're like, okay, we need $1 million and now it's going to cost us 2, right?
Yeah.
That's not a fun conversation to have 6 months in going, well, we spent $1 million and we don't have anything yet and now we need another one. But oftentimes it goes the opposite way. Oftentimes it gets cheaper, which is a positive story. But yeah, that is a tough one and you have to know the people you're talking to as well. Yeah. So different boards and different executives have different views of long-term investment, and so do different industries as well. If you have boards that tend to have longer tenure, they're industries where people don't churn quite as heavily, then you may have a lot more luck with a 1 year plus kind of conversation about value. But if you're in a short, sharp, people are here for 6 months type of thing, then you may need to do it very quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also think, this discussion and approach is really probably suitable for organizations who have an appetite for it. I mean, if your organization is not data ready, infrastructure ready, it's way too early to be trying to introduce these concepts because you'll lose.
They'll still want to, though. That's the problem, right? Yeah, as you as a data leader, you're going to get called up and they're going to go, Gen AI is the next cool thing. Do something about it. And you're going to go, oh, I've got no idea. And that's the trouble. That's why you've got to think through these types of things and how you approach your board. And like, this is just normal kind of dealing with the board stuff that you've got to figure out their drivers, their things that are important to them, what matters to them, what do they actually want out of the conversation they're having with you. Those sorts of things will help you navigate the conversation as well, which often sometimes when you're a more technical person coming in, you like to rely on solutions to speak for themselves, which most of the time they do in terms of traditional solutions. But in this case, you're dealing with a lot more ambiguity. You're dealing with concepts that not everyone you're talking to really understands. Sometimes you don't even understand because in the time that you've been in the board meeting, a next version of, ChatGPT come out and it's different. Now it does photos and videos and all this other stuff. And so there's that element of it as well. Like, you've got to be realistic about your own understanding and how far you can push that too.
Yeah, great. Well, look, thank you so much. It's been really good to hear, your views and sort of approach to how we can sort of navigate this and for data leaders to be able to navigate this. But if to sum it up, what would be the key takeaways if we were to kind of summarize it?
Key takeaways. So I'll leave you some one-liners. Gen AI creates the opportunity for value. It doesn't create the value. And then you got to work on actually articulating what that looks like. Think about value drivers in terms of your teams, your long-term and your short-term value, and what all those things look like. And then look at your third and fourth wave value impacts as well, not just directly what it's doing, but how's it impacting your organization more broadly. Then come talk to me and I'll help you put it in a business case. So, three main things, I think.
Absolutely. And that's what I was going to end on. I mean, usually the podcast is never about, selling anything to anyone, but clearly this is an area where I think a lot of leaders are struggling, Jeremiah. So if anybody did want to lean on your expertise, what are the things that you can help them with?
Yeah, definitely. So I think a lot of what I do is exactly the things we've spoken about today, right? It's really around sit with you, help you understand what you're doing in your organization, how we articulate the value of that, how we sell it to the board, how we put the pack together, how we do the business case, all the different types of value you can articulate. And a lot of that comes as a result of workshops with your stakeholders, those sorts of things as well. And then the more traditional sort of AI data strategy work that results in a roadmap, those sorts of things as well, are quite important. So a lot of the work that I've done at the moment, which has been really interesting, is, hey, we have a data strategy. All this AI stuff's popped up you know, a year and a half into our data strategy, how do we work this in and create a kind of usable outcome as well? So it's adapting that to new things instead of redoing the whole strategy, which can be both time intensive and expensive. And if you've only done it a year ago, it's probably not worth it, right? So you can augment those sorts of things on the side as well. So they're the primary things that we offer.
Absolutely. And look, I think to Jeremiah's point before, I think whether you think you're ready or your organization's ready or not, your executive board and leader will definitely be wanting to know what your organizations are doing or will be doing. So I don't think there's any right or wrong time to be exploring this. So it's absolutely feel free to reach out to Jeremiah if you've got any questions about that as well.
Great. Thank you very much for the time. Really enjoyed the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, Jeremiah, for taking the time out to join us and share your experience and insights into this evolving world of ours.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jeremiah.